Good morning. This is Sunday, January 18th, 2015. We're continuing our series of talks on certain chapters from the letters and the lectures given by Joel Goldsmith, from which were turned into books from 1971 through 1981. And we are on the second book, the 1972 letters, Living the Illumined Life. And we are taking the last chapter, chapter 12, Spiritual Illumination. Now, I generally read and reread and meditate upon each chapter, and I underline what I feel is important to cover. And this morning, as I underlined the text which I wanted to quote, and then looked back over the chapter, I realized there's almost none of it that I didn't underline. Almost all of it's underlined. And I know you don't want to just hear me read a chapter to you. However, we'll see how this turns out. So we're looking at Chapter 12, Spiritual Illumination, and I've noticed something. I have noticed that the general theme throughout all of these talks has been moving from the letter to the spirit. And, in fact, that was the design of the Kailua Study Series in 1955. So it seems to me in the later years of Joel's ministry, the Christ through him was giving us an opportunity to rise out of the letter which kills into the spirit which gives, capital L, life. So let us continue. Chapter 12, Spiritual Illumination. And he says here, while the letter of truth is of tremendous help, it is only an aid to lead us into meditation, where the real transition takes place. And so we're told right there at the beginning of the chapter that the letter... Now, what is the letter of truth? Let's be a little more specific. If you sit down and meditate and you close your eyes, or if you're just thinking with your eyes open, perhaps you've been presented with... Well, maybe your employer comes and says, I'm having a little bit of trouble making payroll this week. It's going to be okay because I'm taking out a loan to cover it, but it's going to be a few days late. And maybe you have a bill that is due before you are going to get that check. Or maybe you're driving down the street and you feel a little scratchy something in the back of your throat, and you feel a little bit warm and lightheaded, and you feel like you're coming down with something. Or maybe you've had an argument with your significant other, and you just can't... Well, it wasn't resolved, and you left that day for work, and you still have to resolve that when you get home. The point is that you have some sort of problem, and so what comes to your mind is a statement of truth, and you say to yourself, get thee behind me. I am a child of God. All that God has is mine. And God is here, right here where I am. In fact, I am God. I am God. The I in the midst of me. And you begin to think about this, these statements of truth. Then you pull up to your place of employment, and you forget about that for a while because you have to concentrate on your work. Maybe it's really tedious work. It could be working in a factory, assembling something that requires some real close soldering, or even work under a microscope. It could be a surgery. Maybe you're a surgeon. Or it could be a fast-paced fast food restaurant where you're a manager and you have 12 people working for you, and you have to unload trucks and balance the books and all of that. The point is, you get busy on the job, and you have a problem because you never realized truth. You just thought about a few statements of truth found in the Bible, or perhaps in Joel's writings, or perhaps in the Bhagavad Gita or some other source. But you thought of some statements of truth, but there was no realization. It just took place on the mental level. Well, that's the letter of truth. The letter of truth takes place in the mind. And the letter of truth does not, it does not operate in your experience. It only is a nice little thought, and perhaps you get a little good feeling thinking about it. But it doesn't bear any fruit. It doesn't express. It doesn't manifest. It doesn't take form. It's just the letter. And so, that scratchiness in the back of your throat develops into a case of the flu, and you're down for 3 or 4 days, and maybe you only have 2 days of excused absence at work, and so that's 2 days you lost money. Or you say you understand to your employer, and you talk to your creditor and tell them you're going to be a couple days late because your employer can't pay you, and your creditor doesn't care, he wants his money, or she wants her money. Or you get home and you try to resolve the issue. You had it all planned out in your mind what you were going to say to your partner, but it doesn't work out, and you end up arguing even more, and your partner stomps out in a fury and gets in the car and takes off. You see? It is because you knew the letter of truth, and the letter kills. What does it kill? What can the letter of truth kill? Well, it brings, if you're trying to live by the letter of truth, you're going to reach that day where that person, that mind, knowing these scriptures, is going to be, well, it's going to die. It's going to come to its end. Now, the letter is not useless, and it's not a bad thing, because he says here, we must eventually reach the realization of the real self. He says the letter is only going to play a small part. The letter is an aid to lead us into meditation. And from the very first book on meditation, The Art of Meditation, that's what he explained to us. Contemplation leads to meditation. Contemplation, if done correctly, can lead you to a place of stillness where then meditation or realization can take place. So, you must go farther than the letter. You must have the spirit. God is a spirit. And to know God, you must be in the spirit, not in the mind. And so the letter, while it helps, is only an aid. And so we're told right in the beginning of this chapter, we must go further. Says Joel, it is in meditation that we make that final contact with our source, with the I Am, that enables us to know the truth, not intellectually, but through realization. You see, realization means to make real, and it becomes real when you feel its movement, or you are consciously aware of a presence, not of your personality or of your mind. So he says, the I that I am is the Christ self. When I make contact with this I have made contact not only with the universal self, which I am, but I have also made contact with you, with your spiritual identity. Yes, we were told to henceforth know no man after the flesh. Are we practicing that? Are we living through the mind where we still see him and her and their ages and their personalities and their handicaps and their shortcomings and their defects of character, and they're sometimes good and they're sometimes evil? Are we still seeing through a glass darkly, through the mind, which can only know the letter? Or have we come up higher where we have a realization of not only our true identity, but the true identity of all? Are we knowing no one after the flesh? This Christ self of me is the Christ self of you, and that is the only equality there is. Says Joel, there is no such thing as equality in human life, and there never can be. The only equality is a spiritual equality, and that equality is because myself is yourself. Yourself is myself. There is only one self. So he says, spiritually, even the least person on the social, the economic, or the political rung of the ladder is my equal. Why? Because there is but one self, and it is divine. Yes, but it's not enough to know this with your mind. You can walk along, drive along, or sit there and rehearse in your mind this statement that there is only one self, and then have your spouse or partner or friend come over, come into your house, and immediately drop into the human mind and see them as a person. You know, one of the most profound spiritual experiences I ever had lasted for a month. And in it, I knew and I could feel and I fell in love with that one presence that dwells in all that is. And as people dropped by my house, I saw through them that same presence. And I knew that that presence is I, and I am them. I knew there was only one I. And you can't know that I and live and abide in that I and feel that I in you without really falling in love with it. Well, at least I couldn't. So I learned there's only one I, and all these personalities and people and ages and sexes and economic status and political status, all of that is nothing. That's the mind. That's the letter. You're looking at the letter, and it kills. It brings you to a place of death. The wages of that are death. Ah, but the spirit, when you see through the letter to the spirit underlying all reality, to the one self of everyone, well, then you really walk around in bliss. Now he says, Joel says, because we have realized our true self, when the natural man of us wants to express himself in some form or other, we can say, get thee behind me, Satan, I'm not interested in you. The temptation may be fear, but we can turn on it. What is the use of fearing when I am eternal? Neither life nor death can separate me from God. That should eliminate the fear because of our recognition of our true identity, our real self. No matter what amount of the natural man is left, we can always turn on it with get thee behind me. Okay, so what is he saying? He's saying when you have the realization of that oneself, that is the conscious awareness of it, then you can turn on this mind, this natural mind, and say, get thee behind me. In everyone, he says, there is some of that natural man left. No one has ever attained full Christhood while on earth. There is enough of that natural man in all of us to want to keep the status quo. You know, he talks a lot about that, reaching the second stage of spiritual unfoldment. You haven't yet reached the third stage, which is conscious awareness of your Christ identity. No, you're still living part of the time in the mind, in the letter, in a human sense of existence, in the natural man, and part of the time, perhaps only in meditation, in an awareness of a presence. So he says, no one has ever attained the full Christhood while on earth. Why? Because when you attain the full Christhood, you are not on earth anymore. I have overcome the world. However, in that second stage, where we've practiced these principles to the place where we have sufficient supply, we have pretty good relationships, we have decent health, well, we want to stay there. We want to relax there. And we do. We relax. I've found it. I've found the kingdom of heaven. No. What we've found is the second stage. And the Christ of us comes along and kicks us in the behind and says, get walking. And that shows up as a problem of some sort or another. And we realize we haven't arrived. And so we have to go back to the drawing board, and what did I miss, and what do I need to do, and surrender some more of that natural self. Perhaps now we have to do what Joel says when he says eventually you have to unsee the good too. So I'm assuming you and I want to go further to this third degree of the spiritual path. Now he says, holding ourselves in the consciousness of our true identity, the natural man recedes. But in the consciousness of our true identity does not mean driving down the street and repeating, I am the Christ. Because that's only the letter, and that's taking place only in the mind, and that doesn't work. No, it means the conscious awareness of our true identity, the conscious feeling of its movement, of its presence, of its reality. And that takes place in meditation at first. Sometimes it hits you while you're just moving around. So he says, the deeper we go in the awareness of the truth that the Christ nature is our true nature, Christ consciousness is our consciousness, Christ life is our life, and are willing to acknowledge it about others, in that degree, the natural man of us has less play in our life, less influence. It may rise up with temptations, and does, but always within us there is this remembrance of our true identity. No one can take that from you once you've attained it, or once you begin to experience it as a conscious realization. Christhood is not to be attained, but recognized. Yes, that's very important. Underline that. You can never attain it. You don't grow into it. What you do is you slowly become consciously aware of the is, of the Christ that is. He says, the Master also revealed to us our true identity. Whom say ye that I am? Unless we can say Christ, we have not attained enough spiritual awareness to discern the Christ of individual being. Even if a person does not know his Christ identity, it is our responsibility to recognize it. And if we do not, in that degree, we are not living out from spiritual consciousness. Now look. The human being lives for itself. The only thoughts it has have to do with itself or its family. It may go even that far. I'm thinking about myself and my family. Will we have enough to eat? Will we have a place to live? Will we have adequate transportation? Will we have DVDs to watch? And that's what the human being does. And since we know our true identity is spirit, then that human being is looking at a glass darkly, trying to plan a whole lifetime around providing and preparing for the letter. The letter. The human mind. The mind that thinks about the world. Or the world mind. Or the mirage, the hypnotism, the illusion of sense. And then once in a while, that human prays up to God, "Will you please help me with this human sense of existence?" And that must seem pretty amusing if you're looking at it from the outside. Or maybe sad, I don't know. Or maybe neither. Now, what about the person that has a conscious awareness of their true identity? What is that person living life, living like? Well, that's the third degree of the spiritual path. Those who walk in the conscious awareness of their true identity. Now, Joel was one of those people. Perhaps we can't relate to Jesus Christ because of the many miracles, but maybe on a closer to us we can relate to Joel Christ or the Christ of Joel. And let's take a look at it. Just look at it. How did he live? Did he walk around thinking about his next meal or how to pay the rent or even how to provide for his family, for himself or his wife Emma or Sam? No, I am pretty sure he took no thought. No, if you look at it closely, he lived his life as Christ, pouring out to humanity. Pouring and pouring and pouring. He was either praying for others, or he was out lecturing around the world in different locations and pouring out that way, or he was pouring out of his income. Do you know that Mr. Joel Goldsmith gave 80% of his income away and still had enough to live a really wonderful life on the island of Hawaii and travel around the world? He never went without. But it wasn't his life he was living. It was Christ living him. And that which he needed was supplied without any thought. So now, if we want to live in the third degree of realization, we have got to live as the Christ. And he says that in this chapter. Now, I'm not telling you all to just make appointments to travel around the world and start giving lectures. And I'm not telling you to start giving 80% of your income. And I'm not even telling you to start praying and practicing spiritual healing. I am saying, as you come out of the letter and ascend up over the mind and become the conscious awareness of Christ and feel the Christ abiding in you, it then will tell you how to live. It will begin expressing itself, and it may very well invite you to speak somewhere. It may very well say, you know, you've been giving 5% for a long time, I want you to increase it to 25%. Start pouring out 25%. And if you hear that in your meditation, you do it. No, not a thought. Thoughts will lead you back into the letter, into death. But the actual experience of the conscious awareness of the living Christ and hearing it utter as a still small voice, when that happens, you can't refuse it. You have to obey. Now, he says, the Christ is not something you are going to attain. The Christ is the being that you are. Which you must recognize. You are to realize that Christ is now your true identity. You do not gain it. There is no you to gain something. There is the you which already is Christ, but which must now be realized. Yes, if you're still feeling like a you that wants to attain Christhood, then you must pay attention to this when he says, there is no you to gain something. No, that you is still the humanhood that wants to put on immortality. And a human being cannot add immortality to itself. A human being is nothing, and it must die that immortality may be revealed as having been standing there forever. And so you don't attain it, you recognize it. If you understand Christ as your identity, that is letting Christ abide in you, as you. If you will let Christ live as you, then when your lower self, the carnal man, the natural man, rises up to say, I don't feel well, I'm sick, or I'm poor, or I'm tempted, or I'm sinning, you will respond with, get thee behind me, Satan, I know who I am. Gradually, you will find it becomes easier and easier, not only to live life as the child of God, but also, what is so very important, to live with your neighbors, knowing their true identity, and the true identity of those who have not yet even begun to suspect it. This has to include all. When I had that first awakening to the spirit underlying all reality, to the spirit inside of everyone and everything, I saw it was just as much in my neighbor as it was in myself. There was no division. It was the same one. Omnipresence. And if you leave your neighbor out and you try to recognize your spiritual identity, but you see that your neighbor is just a animalistic person that just likes to drink and listen to loud music and have sex and eat a lot of unhealthy foods and race down the street. If you see your neighbor as that type of human being and you recognize and or try to recognize your spiritual identity, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. A divided house can't stand. And that's not going to work. You have to see it everywhere. And when it's a real conscious awareness, you will see it everywhere. You can't help it. He says the Christ does not have to earn its living by the sweat of its brow. The Christ lives by grace. Yes, that's what he's always saying in the front of every single book. The illumined walk without fear by grace. That is what happens in the moment that you recognize your true identity and mine. The moment you realize that you are living not as a mortal, but as Christ being, in the degree that begins to register with you, your life loses the sense of battle. It loses the struggle, and your good begins to appear by grace without taking thought. Not by might, nor by power, but by my Spirit, by the Spirit of God that dwells in you, consciously. This can happen only in proportion as you begin to know and to realize that you live as the Christ. But see, you're not living as the Christ if you're just thinking about it, but your actions are still that of a human being struggling to make ends meet. No, it has to be the complete Christ. It has to be first the conscious awareness, the feeling of that transcendental presence moving through you and as you, and then it has to appear out here as a flowing, a pouring forth, a bestowing, a sharing, a giving. Now, he says, in my true identity is the Christ, and the mind of Christ is my mind, the soul is my soul. I and the Father are one. As you live with the recognition of your Christhood, as you meditate, then in that inner stillness and peace, the click comes. And that's putting on the robe. It's putting on the robe of Christhood. It's an inner transition. A transition away from the letter, the mind of the natural man, the world mind, into a conscious awareness of the presence and beholding, living life as a beholder, as it lives. Christ liveth my life. He that seeth me seeth him that sent me. In that recognition, Jesus did not have to heal because he knew they also were the same Christ, and he knew that there are no evil powers, no negative powers. He lived by grace as Jesus, the Christ. When you take the name of Christ, then live as that Christ. Do not make the claim and then turn around and act contrary to it. Yeah, that's what we just said. Once you claim the name of the Christ, live out from the Christ. Once you have recognized Christ as your identity, it is the equivalent of putting on the robe. The robe is the Spirit of Christ. The robe is the consciousness of Christ, or the conscious awareness of Christ. You will not live up to it 100%. No one can. But do not use that as an excuse. Yes, we use that as an excuse, don't we? We really prefer to be, well, I want to live my life a little longer. I don't want to surrender totally and have Christ live my life. I still enjoy pizza and tacos and cheeseburgers and spaghetti and apple pie and strawberry pie and chocolate cream pie and banana cream pie. I still enjoy these things. Butter pecan ice cream and chocolate mint ice cream. I like these things. I want an action movie. I like to see Arnold Schwarzenegger or Kevin Costner, or in the old days it was Sean Connery in an action movie. I want to see these action movies. I like them. And so while I'm doing all these things, it's perfectly fine. I'm not hurting anybody. Only one problem. I'm also not living out as Christ. Doesn't mean these things are bad. I've sat in the middle of the movie theater watching Star Wars and been totally absorbed in the presence and felt the presence in me at the same time I was enjoying the movie. Doesn't mean you can't do these things. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that when you do them as a human being and you're just enjoying your human life, doing the things you like to do, that you're living in a life that is going to die. However, when you live abiding in your true Christ identity and beholding Christ living itself, then you may do some of these same things. but you're living in the conscious awareness of eternal life, your eternal life, and it cannot die. This is a contemplative meditation, and it leads to an inner stillness and quiet. Sometime when you are not thinking at all, when you are not even thinking of meditating, all of a sudden the truth will pop up. Knowest thou not thou art the Christ of God? Knowest thou not thou art the temple of God? And that's what happened to me while I was watching Star Wars. I wasn't meditating. And yet an area of my consciousness through the practice of meditation was open and receptive and listening and beholding. I learned to live a double life, a life out here where I could take care of responsibilities and do the things put in front of me to do, and inside myself I could also be receptive and open and listening for that still small voice, for the Christ. And that's how you pray without ceasing, by abiding in your spiritual identity, even while walking and talking and working. And no, he said here, you can't do it all the time. No one can. But you don't use that as an excuse. You don't say, well, you know, that someday I'll reach the third degree. Right now I'm enjoying my life. No. No. You say, you know, I'm not doing this 100%, but I'm going to practice. He says that if I take 2 minutes 30 times a day, that I will develop that receptivity to where the Christ can pop up and say, knowest thou not thou art the temple of God? He says, you look up and you say, who spoke? Who said that? It was the still small voice. You brought yourself to an inner stillness where you could hear that voice by this continued realization of your true identity. You see? You abide in it in your meditation more and more and more. It doesn't mean you sit down for 5 hours. It means you practice these short little meditations, which opens your consciousness to a state of receptivity. It's a state of receptivity. You are transforming from listening only to world thoughts in the human mind to, even while you're about the business of watching a really cool science fiction movie, you are receptive to the still small voice. You're living an inner and outer life at the same time. It's really cool. I like it. Now, if you live consciously in the realization of the Christ and let the Christ dwell in you as yourself, you will bear rich spiritual fruitage. The more you abide in this truth and let this truth abide in you, the more it will be so unto you. The less you let it occupy your consciousness, the less spiritual grace you will know. See, we have to reach a place where we say, you know, I don't want to be a spiritual child all my life. I want to be a spiritual man, a spiritual woman, a spiritual adult in Christ and have Christ in me. I want to pour out to humanity. I want to pour out. I want to pour. If you have that kind of feeling inside, you will find it. So, he says, whether you say Christ in the midst of me is mighty, and whether you say I in the midst of me is mighty, whether you say Christ goes before me or I go before me, it makes no difference. You are recognizing your divine sonship. And this is what is necessary. You must know this truth without ceasing. But see, not know it with the mind. Yes, the mind, knowing it with the mind is a help, it's an aid to lead you through that contemplation to a state of stillness, to real meditation. However, it's not enough if you stop there. If you stop before the experience within of transition, the experience of momentarily ascending up over that thought about Christ to Christ itself, if you stop before that, you'll never have your true identity consciously realized. So make sure that it's followed with the conscious awareness, what he calls the click of the Christ. So he says, and I started circling the every place he said must. Some people say there are no musts in this spiritual, but that's not true. Listen to what he says. You must know this truth without ceasing. You cannot wait for a problem to arise. You cannot wait for 8 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock at night. You can start that way as a young student, a child, but you cannot remain that way for very long. It must be a praying without ceasing. It must be a knowing of the truth. It must be abiding in the conscious awareness of truth. And I am the truth. And so it must be a conscious awareness of abiding in I. There must be a conscious dwelling in the realization of your true identity and the recognition that there is also a natural man hovering about. It will tempt you to be sick. It will tempt you to sin. It will tempt you to lose your temper or lose your center. It will tempt you to do a lot of things, and some of them you will even fall for. But be assured that the natural man will have less and less place in your life as you abide more and more in your true identity, in the conscious awareness of it. That's the two ways of I. Now, know who you are. Live with it silently, secretly. Then you will know I will never leave you, because I am yourself. You can never be divided from yourself, and yourself is spiritual. To know this is illumination. Yes, there are two ways of life open to a person here on this earth. The human way and the spiritual way, the way of the illumined. The difference between the ordinary human life and the spiritual life is not quite as mysterious as it may seem to be. Living the spiritual life does not remove one from normal home. Yes, we said that. You can do all of these normal things and still experience that Christ. I'll say one thing to you, and maybe all of us don't even care, but I'm going to say it anyway. I discovered in my 40s that it is possible to make love to my wife and at the same time still be consciously aware of a presence. It was a little strange at first, but I came to see that since that presence is the presence of every single one, I could love that presence by loving that presence through my wife. And so I came to see that I could be in that activity and at the same time have that inner door open to a feeling of the presence. And sometimes it came. Now, I bring that up because I want you to know that there is nothing on this earth that you can be doing out here that can prevent you from also having a conscious awareness of the presence. Now, the choice between living in the unillumined or the illumined state does not rest with the human being. It is divine grace that touches him and moves him in this direction. I was touched when I was 17 years old. And from my experience, we've now worked with 101 children, foster children. Why, you ask? Because you have to pour out. Okay, I hope I've made that plain. We've now worked with 101 children. And my experience is that I don't know any of them at the age of 17 that are beginning to experience the presence. But I was. I must have had some previous experience, because that's awful young. But anyway, here I am at 60, and I'm still doing this. Isn't that silly? Isn't that ridiculous? A whole lifetime. All right, now. The spiritual path is a way of joy, peace, and dominion over the things of life. It is a way of harmony, rest, and very often of prosperity. There is the unillumined way of seeing things, and there is the illumined way. Fortunate are those who are touched sufficiently by grace to enable them to seek the illumined way. The unillumined, the human being in his ordinary state, is an individual living his own life with no help from Source. It is a difficult life, this life to which Adam was condemned, because he came to know good and evil. It is a life of toil, effort, and worry. It sure is. You just go for a few weeks without any meditation and see how it is. The illumined are illumined only for one reason. A new dimension has entered their experience. A new dimension, a new awareness, a new self. These are all words to describe an inner experience. The realization of God, or the activity of the Christ. What it really means is that the individual who one day was living his own life alone within himself, relying on his own powers, all of a sudden becomes aware of a presence, a power, a something. Really, that's a good name for it, a something. I experience this presence daily, every single day. And sometimes in the middle of the night, often in the middle of the night. And what is this presence? If I was to describe it to you, I could say, well, I feel it as a divine tingling light presence all around me, through me, as me. There's a oneness with it, and I become totally still and silent when it announces itself. I can't help it. I just am still, and I feel it. That doesn't tell you anything, does it? Well, neither does saying it's a something, but that's all we can do. We can't describe it. So he says, it cannot be defined. It is an intuition, a feeling, an awareness that there is something more than the personal sense of self. Something is with him. Something is protecting him. Something is giving him enlightenment, wisdom, guidance, direction. Christ Jesus called this something the Father within. The Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. Saul of Tarsus, in that moment on the road to Damascus, when he was stricken blind, became aware of the presence. From then on, he was being instructed from within, and was being given light from within. And of course, he called that Christ. I liveth yet not I, Christ liveth my life. And what was he blind to? He was blind to a human sense of life. He went away for many years to ponder this experience and let it come to maturity. And when he came out to begin his ministry, he was able to say, I can do all things through Christ. I live, yet not I. Christ liveth in me. Under his new name, Paul, he realized, I am not alone. The whole of what I was seeking was contact with that which I now realize is within me, and with which I tabernacle, I commune, and which I can go to for refuge, safety, guidance, wisdom, instruction. So the life of Christ Jesus and the life of Paul both testify to the fact that from the moment of their conscious awareness of a presence within, all that heretofore had been sought in the without is now found within. And now here's Joel speaking from a personal level, which he doesn't do too often. I too can say that it is the Father within that has given me this message to teach, that has given me the spiritual discernment with which to hear, or pardon me, to bear witness to the healing and regenerative power of the Spirit. So Joel is saying that for him, It is also a something within. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, he says, because it has anointed me, and I am ordained to heal the sick. Do you notice that always there is this recognition of this something within? He says, the Master has been described as a lonely man, and Paul's entire life was also lonely. Yet there was no sorrow in this, because there was always this inner communion. That is a little bit of this path. That is a part of this path. I can testify to that. I have experiences within, and my entire family, and even my extended family, and all of my neighbors, and I can't tell a one. First, they wouldn't understand. They may look at me like I'm off-centered. And second, it might scare them. And third, some of them are swine, and you don't cast your pearls before swine. Not many, but some. And third, they're not asking, and that's the important one to me. They have to ask. They have to ask. Many of you have asked that I have a group called Mystical Principles, and that I make these and continue to make these talks, and so I do. Because you're asking, you want this. But to just try to go pour it on them when they don't want it, no, that wouldn't be right. I have to pour on their level. And so if my neighbor needs clothes, I give them clothes. If they need money, I give them money. If they need a ride somewhere, I give them a ride somewhere. If they need a word of encouragement, I give them that. A smile, I try to give them that. They can always use prayer, and I always give them that by trying to recognize, trying to look through the humanhood being presented to the underlying reality of Christ. So, there can be some loneliness in that there's nobody to tell these things to, yet it's not an overwhelming loneliness, because you at all times can usually close your eyes and within a minute or two commune with this inner something, which is your true self. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. But the dwelling place of the person who expects to enjoy this security must be the kingdom of God within, not living any more in the external, and yet not leaving it either. No, we stay in it. What did he say? I ask you, Father, not to take these out of the world, but to leave them in it. And we're left in it, but not of it. To be in the world, but not of it, means to live your daily life, but without concern. God will be your hiding place. And the Master reveals, I am the bread of life. If you need bread, God will be the bread. Do you need to be resurrected? Then God must be the resurrection. When you realize the divine presence that is within you and learn to commune and tabernacle with it, to pray in, through, and with it, everything in the outer world conforms to this inner pattern. All things work together for good in the outer picture. The whole outer picture conforms to one of harmony and peace. What a difference between that man who lives in God and that self alone and unaware of the spiritual presence filling all space within and without. What worries, concerns, and fears there are when life is lived separate and apart from the presence. Those fears are the fears of the natural man who receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, the natural man who is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. But how quickly these evaporate and disappear in the life experience of the same individual In that moment when it is revealed to him, I am in the midst of you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will be with you unto the end of the world. Rest in me. Rest in this word. Yes, the same individual who can be a murderer, out murdering Christians with the name of Saul, contemplates these things in his heart. And one day, walking down the street, he's not even sitting down in meditation, he's walking down the street. Suddenly, realization comes. It dawns in consciousness. Oh my God! He has a conscious awareness of a living presence. Saul, why do you persecute me? I'm yourself. He's blinded for a while. He dwells in the secret place of his eternal self. He becomes a new man. He becomes Christ. Christ carrying its message around the world. He becomes the leader of the whole Christ message on earth. And his name becomes Paul. That's what happens to us. When we leave the letter and come into the conscious awareness of the Spirit. I found this interesting here because as a child I really loved reading books on Houdini. I just loved it. And I found it interesting that Joel says, in my younger years I used to stand sometimes behind the scene of a vaudeville house when Harry Houdini was performing. That's great. He was applying certain principles which he understood. Only to those who were in darkness insofar as magic was concerned were his tricks difficult and mysterious. And that's the way the spiritual path appears to be. Very mysterious to those who do not understand the principles. So he says, to the illumined there is no mystery about the word illumination, or about the term the Christ, or the Spirit of God that dwelleth in me. It is simple. It means only that there is something. No one has ever been able to define it, analyze it, or name it. It is spirit. It is incorporeal. And this is talking about your true self. You are spirit. You are incorporeal. Go look in the mirror. That's not you. That's the letter of you. That's the mind's vision. That's the mind trying to color in spirit. And, of course, the mind is nothingness. But behind that is a something, a spirit, and it is your true self, and it is incorporeal. You are incorporeal. No one has ever seen you, heard you, tasted, touched, or smelled you, or even been able to think about you. It is just something that is, and you are aware that it is. You are aware that it is within you. And finally, eventually, you are aware that it is you. Though you may at first intellectually agree that God has provided you from the beginning with His Son in the midst of you, but this acknowledgement can be only a first step. Yes, because you're agreeing with the letter. From now on, you tabernacle with this revelation. You commune within yourself. You ponder. You meditate. Until, like Paul, in a sudden moment, it dawns. It's true. The Spirit of God is upon me. This grace is here where I am. You see? Now, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. When this spirit finds an individual in bondage, political, physical, mental, moral, or financial, it operates at once to set him free. That is, if it is realized, not thought. The mission of the Spirit of God in man is to bring forth freedom. I am come, the Spirit of God declares unto you, I am come that you might have life, and life more abundantly. The realization of this indwelling presence is your freedom. No weapon formed against you can prosper. Always the miracle of freedom will take place through some normal, natural way in the human picture. Now, that's important. I have seen my wife healed from something that was going to require surgery. I saw her healed within a couple of days before my eyes. But it appeared to be happening in a normal, natural way, as if her body was just healing itself. I have seen where supply cannot possibly come. There's no way. And yet somebody offers me $30,000 for something that's only really paper, for a title. And so I've seen it appear in normal, natural ways. But the source, of course, is that invisible something called self or Christ. The unillumined, he says, is a person living by their own power. The illumined is living in conscious awareness of an indwelling presence being in power. All right, I am not living my life alone. I live, yet not I. The Spirit of God, which is upon me, is living my life. We're almost done. I know it's been an hour. We've got about 5 more minutes. He says, gross materialism has reversed the secret of supply. Supply is not getting. Supply is giving, sharing, bestowing. It is only in the measure of your outpouring. See, you determine it. In the measure of your outpouring that you have an infinite amount of supply. I grant, he says, that only spiritual light and spiritual illumination reveal this, because materialistic sense has reversed it, and in doing so has made many persons poor. This belief that getting makes rich and brings supply has caused poverty on earth. Now you must know something here. You can't pour out from your humanhood. You see? That again is living by the letter, and the letter kills. If you pour out from your humanhood, the more you give away, the less you'll have. To him that hath shall it be given. And so, if you have the conscious awareness that Christ is pouring, then the more it pours, the more you have. You see that? It's subtle, but it's an important distinction. Recognize Christ pouring out love, pouring out money, pouring out time, pouring out prayer, and you shall find you have infinite supply. He says money's not supply. Money's one of those effects of supply. It comes to individuals in abundance when they have learned the spiritual law, which is giving, sharing, bestowing from your Christhood. The freedom you give to anyone is the freedom you attain. The release that you give to others is the freedom and release that returns to you. Through spiritual illumination, you see that what you give returns to you. You are that very center through which all of God's grace must flow out to the universe. Yes, that's what you are. You should be the divine Christ, both within and without. When you think in terms of getting or receiving, you damn it up. What you give is what you have. What you hold, you lose. Why? Because in giving, the Spirit of God is upon you, and it is this Spirit that is flowing out. Therefore, all the good that you give, the sharing, the releasing, the freeing, is not really of yourself. It is only that you have allowed yourself to become a transparency through which the grace of God may flow to this universe. As long as you're afraid that you're not going to have enough, you're living the human life, you're living by the letter, and the letter kills, and you won't have enough. It is only when you make this transition within and say, wait a minute, I am the Christ, and then rest until you feel it. And then pour out from that. Allow it to guide you how to pour, whether it's 5%, 25%, or 80% of your income, whether it's 5 hours of prayer for those around you, or 5 times a day of prayer for those around you, whether it's a word of encouragement, a handshake, a smile, clothes, or spiritual truth from up at the podium to a class. When one way or another you pour out from your Christhood, that's how you prove your Christ. Because when you pour out from your Christhood, it returns, heaped up, pressed down, running over. You have abundance. You yourself set it in motion by pouring out. But not pouring out of your humanhood, pouring out of your Christhood. He says, spiritual illumination reveals men and women are the instruments, transparencies, through which love, truth, justice, mercy, and benevolence are to flow. Only those who continue to accept this belief of personal good and personal evil continue either to benefit or suffer. In the moment that you realize the Spirit of God is flowing through me, then you lift your eyes above and say, thank you, Father, for unfolding and revealing truth. Never again fear man whose breath is in his nostrils. Do not fear the power of princes. There is divine consciousness closer to you than breathing. And so you see man now only as the instrument or transparency through which grace flows. That which is not ordained of God cannot survive. Besides God, there is nothing. And God is in the midst of you. God is here and now. So awaken and realize that you are free. The fetters have fallen. You are looking above the head of man, looking right through his eyes to the center of his soul, and there you find this inner something, this presence, and you rest in that presence. You cease concern. This is spiritual illumination. This is the illumined who walk without fear by grace. And finally, he says, as illumination brings a deeper awareness of the indwelling Christ, our hearts overflow with gratitude for God's great gift of grace. May the joy of that realization be yours, and may each day throughout this year be filled with its peace. So, that is the chapter, Spiritual Illumination, in the book Living the Illumined Life, which came from the 1972 letters. And interestingly enough, 1972 was when I picked up a copy of The Art of Meditation for the very first time and discovered this thing called The Infinite Way. And I've been walking it ever since, which is now 43 years. Okay. That brings to, well, hopefully not to a close, but to a beginning. Everyone that is listening to this, hopefully it brings a beginning where you begin to live and pour and share out from the Christ, which you really are. And in the pouring and living, giving and sharing, you not only lift yourself, but you lift your neighbor as yourself. This is how we save planet Earth, by looking through planet Earth to the kingdom here and now. Well, practice this through this new year, and hopefully you will come into the experience of a new self. Well, it's actually an old self, but newly realized. So hopefully you come into a new experience of your infinite, eternal, immortal, incorporeal self. Thank you.